This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt on the AM 740 Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
And good morning. This is your co-host to the show, undergardener, or sous chef, should I say, Frank Proctor, accompanying Charlie through this a little bit chilly Saturday morning.
Windy.
It's going to be very windy today, apparently.
It already is.
80 kilometer an hour winds times, so you know, no day to be carrying a sheet of plywood across town. No.
Or an umbrella.
Yeah. And if you want to keep your hat, staple it. Phone numbers. Can I just do this El Quico and
for
make sure?
For sure. I mean, you're the co-host.
I am the co-host.
Wants to control the show.
That's so exactly right. For Toronto, 416-360-0740. Okay, that's Toronto. Then anywhere else in the province, toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Now, Charlie, I have to tell you that people have been saying, Frank, you're not doing enough research for The Garden Show.
That's true.
You like to claim that you're, you know, co-host, and yet they hear nothing that I actually do research, but I have done some research here today to, you know, lay claim to at least part
to support this
the Charlie Dobbin
Enterprise.
Garden Show. Yes. So, right off the top, here's a little gardening rule for everybody to remember. Okay. Gardening rule. When weeding, the best way to make sure you are removing a weed and not a valuable plant is to pull on it. If it comes out of the ground easily, it is a valuable plant.
That is a rule, actually.
You see?
Yeah. That's true.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, see?
There you go. I'm glad you've done some research.
Well, thank you. Now I feel better.
When was the last time you did any weeding?
I think when I took those two tomato plants on the bus and that you gave me, and I left them on the bus.
That was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I know. I still feel badly about that.
But you know, that in a way, that could be kind of a cool thing. For anybody who doesn't remember, I grew and gave Frank two sweet little tomato plants to take home to grow on his balcony, and he forgot them on a bus or streetcar or something. But you know what? Maybe that wasn't a bad thing.
It was a pay forward sort
of thing. Right. It's kind of like guerrilla gardening. It's like putting it out there, and somebody probably picked them up and took them home and planted them.
Well, I hope so.
Because people do that with books, eh? You leave a book, and somebody picks it up, and it's all, you can track books all over the world. They you know, it's kind of, I forget
GPS.
What it's called. No. It's actually entered. Like, I found the book in Bloor subway station.
And then they'll leave it somewhere else.
Read it, and I left it on a bench at, you know, such and such.
Oh,
and then somebody picks it up, and the book can be tracked. You know, people follow these things. It's neat. It's a neat way to get stuff out there.
I'll find out more about that. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, and so maybe it wasn't that bad when you left that tomato plant.
Well,
I probably shouldn't harass you the way I do.
Yeah, 2 years, and I'm still getting it.
I know, but you deserve it. Okay, so I had some homework.
Oh, hi to David Gaskin, our producer, who is...
Morning, Dave. Putting up with us.
I know.
I had some homework.
Remember,
we had a call last week regarding overwintering water lilies.
I remember.
You do. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you took notes, right? So, and I'm assuming that this was a hardy water lily. Okay, I'm going to assume that. It was Jude from Cambridge who called and wasn't sure because her pond freezes to the bottom, so she didn't want to leave it outside. Okay, here's the answer. If your lilies are growing in pots, then you have two choices. One is after you trim back all the foliage, because of course as the weather cools down, all the green leaves will start to shrivel up. Mm-hmm. Trim it all down. Then you either drop the pot back into the deepest part of the pond to overwinter, but that's assuming the pond doesn't freeze solid. You know, shallow ponds do freeze solid. So in that case, you take the pot, lily and all, into the cool, dark basement. You keep that lily rhizome damp all winter. So leave it in the pot for that purpose. Mm-hmm. Now, it's the cold part. You need to keep it, if you have a root storage, cold storage room, perfect. You don't want it to freeze, but you do want to keep it cold because that will keep it dormant. A beer fridge that doesn't have beer in it can work very well.
I'm crying. Oh, that's right.
In the winter, sometimes we don't keep our beer fridges quite as full. So you can stick the water lily in the beer fridge if you don't have a cold storage room. And then, of course, in the spring, when the ice is off the pond and the water starts to warm up, you'll know the water's warm enough if you put your hand in it and you don't scream in agony. Then the water's warm enough. You can drop the lily back into the pond and it'll all start to grow again. So it's that simple.
Well, good. Mm. Okay, yeah. I'm glad you did your homework.
Thank you very much. Yes, all right. Thank you. So I didn't have a lot of announcements. A reminder that I will be doing a presentation this Monday evening, The Big Freeze, in Oshawa for the Oshawa Garden Club. And they meet at 7:30 p.m. at the St. George's Ukrainian Heritage Center. So that should be fun. And remember as well, the Hamilton Pumpkin Fest is going on every weekend right through to the end of October at RBG, at the Royal Botanical Gardens, the Arboretum. Pretty fun if the weather is great, like it was last weekend.
Right.
Was that great weather?
Unbelievable.
Got a lot of gardening done last weekend, I'll tell you. It was so perfect.
Did the boys do all the laying down of the sod and what have you?
Well, soil, that's right. Soil, I had the young men, working away. I had two young men, and then one dropped off, and then I had only one young man.
Sounds like you're a pretty tough taskmaster.
It was my son who dropped off.
Oh, is that right?
but we did get a lot done, which was great. Yeah. It was very effective and always nice to have. Yeah, it was kind of rent-a-son kind of weekend, I think. So, but if you want to get out to the Pumpkin Fest at the RBG, kids' activities, fun zone, pony rides, hay wagon rides, farmer's market, all kinds of haunted maze, neat stuff going on.
Yes. Did you catch that item? And this is, in regard to mazes, there's a down in the States, there's like an 8-acre corn maze, and a family got lost in there.
Oh, no, I didn't see it.
Yeah, and they had to use a cell phone, call for help, because they were just getting panicked.
Yeah.
And it turns out they were 8 meters away from being on the outside, but
it's
you don't
big,
know.
Tall corn. Yeah, yeah, you don't know.
Well, that
and you start
scary.
Blasting through the corn, and you don't know what direction
you're
going in.
Circles, and
that's what mazes do.
Scary.
Eh?
Okay.
Dead ends.
Hey, that'd be a good thing to know about. Anybody know a real good maze?
Yeah, mazes are fun. This is the time of year, whether it's corn or Halloween. Hay bales and all kinds of neat stuff.
Let me do the phone numbers again, Charlie. Okay. And I'll give a little mantra as well. In Toronto, 416-360-0740. And then anywhere else in the province, it's toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. And, hey, we've got a few lines open here already. Well, okay, we'll get those filled up. Dave Gaskin will be out there with his bullwhip, even rounding up people on Queen Street to get in here and make a phone call. 9:12, the time at AM 740. Charlie Dobbin at The Garden Show returns momentarily.
Friends say she's down to earth, and that's usually where you'll find her. Welcome back to the AM 740 Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
And Frank Proctor alongside for the ride here, and lots of fun. I enjoy starting my Saturdays with Charlie here in the studio because it's always a guaranteed giggle.
Really?
Although we do learn a lot, and I say we inclusive of the listeners like June in Bolton, whom I hope will verify my words there. Hello, June. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
I'll just be a sec, turn my radio down.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll tap dance in the meantime.
You were dancing earlier.
Vamp till ready. Yeah, I always do a little tap dance. There's Dave Rediger coming in.
He's tap dancing too, I see.
Yes. Jeez.
Man.
Oh, my Lord.
Dancing
look at
with
he
the
really
stars.
Is.
They're Rediger everywhere.
Dancing and jiggling too, might I say.
Don't look too close.
Okay. Hi, June.
Good morning.
There you are. Okay. Good.
Thank you for taking my call. My inquiry is about, I have a PG hydrangea, and I'm wondering if I should be pruning it back this fall or leaving it until spring.
Are there flowers on it right now?
Yes, there are.
That's why I like to leave it alone for the winter, because those flowers will stay on the bush all winter, And of course, they'll get a little wind blown and tattered, but they're still pretty. They go from white to pink in the cool, and then they'll turn that bronzy, crispy sort of look for the winter. And I like to leave all my hydrangea flowers on all winter, unless they're interfering with a walkway or something. So leave them alone and then do a proper trim in the early spring, just when the green shoots are starting, you know, the little green buds are starting to show.
And how much... should you prune off?
Well, when it comes to PG hydrangeas, it depends how much you want to prune it. You can reduce the size of the plant by as much as a third at a time. So if it's really getting big and overgrown, don't hesitate to, you know, really go to town and take it right down to a size that's manageable. At least, no matter what, always look for any dead wood in the spring, any crisscrossing branches that might be rubbing against each other, damaging the stems. And the other thing is shape. Look for where the next growth is going to come from so that when it starts to flower at the end of the summer, it's got flowers everywhere. You want that kind of nice balanced shape to the shrub.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, June.
Really enjoy your show.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks.
June
Bye-bye.
From Bolton here with us at AM 740, Zoomer Radio, Charlie Dobbin on the air. Did I say do it again? Yeah, Charlie Dobbin. I don't know what gets
Durbin.
In
here.
Durbin.
Yeah. You used to call me Charlie Dubbin.
like in the
shoe
rubbing.
Cleaner. Yeah, exactly.
And
boot preservative.
Well, pardon my frayed lips here this morning. Jack in Welland, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'd like to know, Charlie, what do I do to winter over a snowball bush?
The snowball you're referring to, is it a hydrangea similar to our last caller, to June?
You know, it's just a young one. I just got it this year. This is the first year for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the tag on it just said snowball.
It didn't say anything else?
No, nothing else, no.
Because there's so,
got it from the farmer's market.
Oh, yeah, okay. Are there snowball-shaped flowers on it now?
Well, no, there isn't.
Okay.
There were, when I picked it up, mm-hmm. there were two of them. Mm-hmm. Very small, but they were dying off.
Okay, and that was back in June.
Well, that was back, right.
Okay, so probably what you've got, the plant that we commonly refer to as a snowball bush is not a hydrangea, like our last caller. It's actually a viburnum, and it does bloom in late spring, early summer. And for winterizing, they're native plants. They actually, maybe not that one specifically. Some viburnum are native, but the snowball bush should get some nice fall color, kind of burgundy leaves, which is great. They'll fall off, and then just leave it alone. You've obviously got it in the ground now.
That's in the ground, yes.
And I hope you've given it lots of room, because this plant does want to get, you know, 6 feet tall and 6 feet wide.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, it's going to have lots of room, yes.
Okay, perfect.
All
so,
right.
You know what, the main thing with newly planted plants, and then particularly our evergreens, though in this case this is a deciduous plant, the most important thing we can do in the fall is make sure that the soil is nice and moist before freeze up. So, of course, we've had rain for the last couple of days, no problems there, but no sort of freeze-up imminent on the horizon. So that's the one thing, is keep your hose out as long as you can.
Uh-huh.
If necessary, do whatever watering you need to do to make sure that all your evergreens and your newly planted plants are, you know, well, thoroughly saturated before winter. But
right.
Otherwise, no protection required, nothing like that.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're very
Thank
welcome.
Thank you, Jack. Have a great day in Welland.
Thanks,
and looking at the clock here, we're coming up at 9:20. And just a quick reminder of our phone numbers, 416-360-0740 in Toronto, and toll-free anywhere in the province, 1-866-740-4740. I forgot to do a little mantra. Yes, call early, call often. One question per call. But you, I see, have not forgotten to do your exercising.
Absolutely not. Not after the kind of work I was doing last weekend.
You needed that
That's
Sierra
Sil,
huh?
Exactly. Frank is referring to Sierra Sil, which is a mineral supplement that both of us take, just to keep those joints lubricated and working and as pain-free as possible when you're hauling around wheelbarrows of dirt and you know, doing the kind of moving of material I was doing last week. Yes, it was a godsend to have been taking my CRSL on a consistent basis, daily, just to be as pain-free as possible, particularly the next day.
Yeah.
Keeps me active, for sure. And like, if you have any arthritis or sore joints, this may work for you. It doesn't work for everybody, but CRSL people claim that 14 days is enough to prove whether this can make you feel better, which is why, for more information, you can call 1-877-JOINT-14.
You supply the what and where, and she'll come through with the how. You're listening to the AM 740 Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
And I'm the sous chef of the Garden Show, Frank Proctor. And both Charlie and I appreciate you sharing part of your weekend with us. So thank you to, well, in this case, it would be Joan in Brentford. Hi, Joan.
Yes, good morning, Charlie and Frank.
Morning.
I have a question regarding the indoor hibiscus.
Mm-hmm.
We have just brought it in, and it doesn't have any more buds on it, and it has one bloom, which looks like it's going to be falling off very shortly.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to know, when is the best time to trim it, and how far back should it be trimmed?
Okay, good question. Do you need to trim it? Is it really big and overgrown, or is it just not
particularly... No, it's overgrown.
Okay. Well, like you said, if the final flower is just finishing off and you see no evidence of buds, I would trim now to bring it back to a controllable shape. Now, that's assuming you've got a good sunny spot that you can put this in for the rest of the winter. Otherwise, if you do a lot of trimming and you put it into a fairly dark spot, you're going to find it's going to really kind of hunker down and become dormant. So where's your plan to place it for the winter?
Right now, it's in our sunroom, and it does get... quite a bit of sun.
Perfect. So that's good, because that sun will keep the plant awake and growing. Now, it's not going to, you know, grow like crazy because it's shorter days. But at the same time, trimming back always stimulates new growth. So that's why it makes sense to do the trimming back. As long as you've got a sunny location, both the trimming and the sunshine will cause it to grow and fill in and look better. It take a few weeks, but you know, not a problem. Often when we bring in our hibiscus, expect a few leaves to turn yellow just because it was brighter outside than it is inside. So a few leaves will drop off, but watering as required, giving lots of sun, it should look very good again within a few weeks.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, fine then.
Hey, thanks, Joan.
Thanks for your call.
Happy
thanks
news for Joan there. And
bye-bye.
Keeping that indoor hibiscus healthy?
Yes, indeed. Well, I did the exact same thing. Brought one in. Covered in buds, though, unlike Jones. So the last thing I want to do is any trimming. But I trim mine back really hard in the spring so that it's not a very pretty plant when it goes out.
Is that
out.
A common thing with most people, that they're afraid to cut back too much? I mean, are they, you know?
Yeah, I think for most people there's a fear of how much and when it comes to pruning. And the thing with something like a hibiscus is, well... In the fall, most plants are wanting to just hunker down and kind of have a bit of a dormancy or a semi-dormant state. So we typically like to do our pruning in the spring if we can.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes we can't. You know, you bring a plant in the fall that's covered in buds or flowers, but it's, you know, 6 feet across and can't get through the door. You got to trim it then.
Yeah. Right?
So sometimes you got to trim off flowers. There's no way
just
around it.
Kind of use your noggin, I suppose. Anne in Keswick on the line with us right now. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, folks.
Morning.
It's been forever and ever for me to try to get on here to ask you a question.
Oh, I'm glad you got through.
Anyway, stupid me bought a couple of flowering almond bushes a couple years ago, and I planted them in the back corner, and then I went and put some strawberries in, and then the raspberry bushes decided to grow around one of them, and the rabbit took care of one, and it's dead because it ate the bark off.
Yeah.
And I have one that's half remaining, and I'd like to know, is it too late now for me to dig it up and maybe move it somewhere else to get it out of the raspberries?
Wow, what an all-encompassing question. That's great. And you've got a dead rabbit, you say. Well,
well, the rabbit ate the bark off them, and I guess I should have covered them in some burlap or something.
They're tasty
bark. And last winter, the rabbit, I guess, took care of one of them, so one of the bushes is totally dead, and I cut it off.
And
the other one, it ate half of it, so I pruned it off. And so I'm curious, can I prune it or can I move it now? The plastic collar on the bush, which I kept, says it grows 2 meters high and a meter and a half wide, and it blooms in May.
Right.
But being in the raspberries, I don't think I ever got to see that.
Frank's getting a good giggle out of this visual that you're giving us.
It's just, it sounds like a jungle you got going there.
All right, so yes, you can move the flowering almonds now, mm-hmm. though it's not optimal. The okay. most, the best time, or when we move things in the fall, because fall is a great time to plant and transplant, we like to do it with at least a 6-week window between that planting or transplanting and hard frost.
Oh, we're going to get snow probably the first week of November
yeah,
up here.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd say you're only about 2 weeks away from hard frost.
Should leave it then?
Better to leave it, because what'll happen is, I mean, if you really have to do it, it's worth a try. But what will likely happen if you, say, moved it this weekend, as the ground starts to freeze, the plant will not have been able to put out any roots. So, you know, whatever root ball you move will be put into the ground and in the new location. But as the ground starts to freeze, the plant gets heaved up out of the ground.
Oh.
Because the ground, of course, the water in the soil all freezes and expands, and plants that are just loose in there tend to get pushed right up.
Okay. So when this starts to, like, the leaves will fall off, obviously, mm-hmm. and when it starts to bud up in the spring, is that when I should move it before it ever gets to the flowering stage?
It flowers very early. Flowers even before the leaves.
Oh, are they?
So that's the sort of the drag of it. What would be best is to enjoy the flowers as much as you can.
If I can see them in the raspberries.
Maybe you should cut down the raspberries. I know. And the problem, of course, too, is raspberries are so prickly. To start climbing in there to move something is no fun at all either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so there's the option. I mean, you could move it. If you could get out there sort of today and move it. Just remember that, keep an eye on it right through the winter. In Keswick, you get a very consistent snow layer typically, so that helps a lot to insulate,
mm-hmm.
keeps the plants able to withstand the craziness of winter. But if for some reason all the snow were to melt, go and take a look. Make sure that root ball has not been heaved up out of the ground. And if it has, step on it. Get it back down
just
into the ground.
Tamp it down.
Should be patient then and move it in the spring, I guess. And that way I'd have a better success rate.
Probably.
Yeah.
But try and move it after it flowers, just so you can enjoy the flowers
if you can see them. And I will wrap it with burlap this time, because otherwise the rabbit will take care of the rest of what's left of it.
That's right, exactly. Protect that poor thing.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Have
a terrific weekend, fellas.
And
same
you too.
Bye. Bye-bye. That's a fun call from Ann in Keswick. We like happy people here.
We do. Particularly, like, radio is always so funny when it comes to gardening. You know, sometimes you really do need those visual good descriptions.
That was just blew my mind what was going on there.
You could see that all happening.
Coming around to 9:32, so let's push along and catch what we have question-wise from Barbara in St. Catharines. Hey, good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Frank, and good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
My rose bushes are very overgrown.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guide me as to when they should be trimmed right back?
What kind of roses are they? Are they shrub roses or, you know, hybrid tea roses?
They're hybrid.
Okay.
And one or two have grown into shrubs.
Oh, my. Okay.
I do have some garden help,
mm-hmm.
and they seem to not attend to it the way we used to when we were attending to them.
Yes. Not everybody knows how to prune roses, so there's sometimes a fear of doing the wrong thing.
And having said that, there have been many, many blooms.
Oh, good. Good.
So the color has been quite spectacular.
Yeah.
I've been grateful for that.
All the nice... Well, we had a nice summer when it came to roses,
mm-hmm.
ultimately. It started so cold and wet, and yet it got so nice and hot and dry, the roses loved it. What I would do, and what I do with my roses in the fall, is I trim them the minimal amount.
I see.
The amount that I trim them is so that I have no interference with walkways, because I do have roses right along my garage and right at my front door.
Mm-hmm.
So I trim to make sure that I'm not snagging the kids with their Halloween costumes or you know, any, you know, I can still shovel snow, etc.
Right.
The lowest that I ever trim my roses down, and I'm talking about hybrid teas and grandifloras, is the rule of thumb is trim to your knees in the fall, ankles in the spring.
And where in the spring?
Ankles.
I see.
So we do a trimming that as necessary in the fall to eliminate damage happening either to people or to the rose getting whipped around in the winter wind.
We do cover them in burlap.
You do? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll just find that if you trim them down, I mean, obviously a climbing rose or big shrub roses, we wouldn't go as far as the knees.
No.
But trim just to try and ensure that the plant is not damaging itself.
Very good.
Being whipped around in the wind.
Yes.
Now, come spring,
ankle.
And I'm talking early spring when the buds are just starting to swell and you can see very clearly live canes and dead canes and, of course, old, heavy-duty, you know, gray and brown,
right,
the big old stuff, that all comes out.
I see.
And that comes out right at ground level.
Okay.
Now, with the tea roses, I literally go right down to the ankles. I bring my roses right down to being about 4 inches tall.
Really?
And I take out every cane except for maximum five mm-hmm. canes. And the idea, of course, is that when you look down at the rose after it's been trimmed in the spring, mm-hmm. it looks like an open hand.
Right.
So that I choose pencil-sized canes that are growing away from the center so that we've got the plant is going to grow in an open way so
right.
that sun and air can penetrate the center, and it just keeps them healthier through the growing season.
Great.
Okay.
I'll certainly pass that on to them.
That's right. You stand over top of them and you tell them what to do, because trimming roses, the confidence comes with doing it. And sometimes
right.
that's what they need, is somebody to stand over and say, yes, take that one. Yes, take it further, further, further.
And then
you'll
learn from then on. Yeah.
Exactly. And then you see how they grow, and then you're much more brave in the future.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thanks for joining
Thanks,
the show, Barbara.
Barbara.
Right, you are. Bye-bye.
Okay, 9:35 a.m. 7:40, Zoomer Radio, and it's The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, with roses once again coming up here. And these are climbing, for gosh sakes. Pat in Grafton calling in. Good morning, Pat.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Great.
Hey, Pat.
I have two beautiful climbing roses.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, where they're placed, they get the direct north wind all winter long.
Mm.
Now, last year, I know I have to take care of covering the bottom, mulch it around, you know, mm-hmm. that part. Last year, we put burlap around them
mm-hmm.
and some straw in the burlap to help insulate them.
Mm-hmm.
And we nearly killed them. I thought I had lost them. And so this year, I don't quite know what I want to do with them. They're only about, 4 feet tall, because so much died off and we cut it back.
Right. What color are they when they bloom?
Well, one is what they call the Joseph's coat. It's uh-huh. all different colors. There's pinks and oranges and mm-hmm. yellows on the same bush. And the other one is a beautiful pink one. I've had it so long, and I moved it from where we lived before to here 6 years ago. And it just... it just wants to live. It just comes and it blooms and it blooms, and it's a nice deep pink.
Lovely.
And
right.
I would really hate to lose that one especially. The Joseph's coat I bought after I moved here, it doesn't have any sentimental value to it yet. But.
Right. So the northern exposure, or the northwest exposure, that's that winter wind whistling through.
Yes.
Okay.
My house sits east-west,
mm-hmm.
and my deck is out
the side.
So it's northeast.
All right. Oh, okay. So that's not that bad, because it's actually northwest is our prevailing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, where I sit, it seems to howl from, you know.
That happens.
And there's nothing to protect them, because they're around the deck.
Yeah.
And
right. So they're not against the house then. What are they against? They're against just a trellis that's up along the side of the deck?
Yes.
Right, so they really are exposed.
They really are exposed.
Okay.
I suppose I should move them, but I don't know where to move them.
Well, you know, I wonder if, like you said, that you worry that what you did last year, the burlap and the straw, actually did more damage than good.
Yeah,
and that can happen if we wrap plants tight with burlap, you know, make a real tight little gnome out there. What can happen is we can trap cold air inside the plant. So at night, the temperature drops, you know, 10, 20 below. That cold air penetrates into the center of our wrapped plants. Then the sun comes up. But if it's a still day, that cold air can just sit there all day and never actually sort of permeate out and warm up to the outdoor temperatures, which is why wrapping can sometimes be a problem.
Okay.
My impulse, if it's that windy, two things. One is I would trim as necessary this fall to eliminate all that movement that happens and we start getting all that sort of scraping and banging and crashing around.
Okay.
Or tie the canes so that they aren't whipping all over the place in the wind. I wouldn't hesitate to do a very loose outer burlap sort of shelter. Now, depending on how you can access, you may have to actually just wrap the burlap right onto the canes. The other thing would be to drive some stakes into the ground and wrap the burlap on the outside of the stakes so that you're making like a little hut almost, if you will, around the roses that's not actually touching the roses. It's just doing a bit of a windbreak. Don't be throwing any straw or anything in there, though. Allow the snow to fall in. Allow leaves. I mean, you'll mound as you will as normal. You know, do that hilling of at the base.
Right.
But just allow snow to fall in. If some leaves fall in, that's fine. But I wouldn't like fill the whole thing up with anything, and that will allow better air circulation through the winter.
So it does. It needs air, but not wind.
Correct. Yeah,
okay.
The extreme wind is what can really hurt, and because of desiccation, really, it just dehydrates the plant, and it ends up dying.
Yeah, and
or canes die.
Yeah, because of my location, especially near the lake, we do get strong wind.
That's right, for sure.
Yeah,
so that it is a fine line when it comes to wrapping. Loose wrap is important, or at least a windbreak is important in your case, by the sounds of it.
Okay. Yes,
good luck.
Thank you so much.
Let us know how that works out.
I will.
Thanks,
okay,
Pat.
Thank you very much. That's an interesting solution to the problem. The stakes, the four stakes, and then wrap that with burlap and stapled there, I guess. And,
well, that's right. And so you've got like a little enclosure, but it's open at the top.
Right.
That's a very important part of all this. The open at the top allows snow to fall in and allows that air to, you know, warm air, cool air, everything to kind of move through.
Okay. The Charlie Dobbin Garden Show on the air. And just before we take a little break here, get back to other questions. Charlie, you had an email that you wanted to get to.
Oh, I did. Thank you very much.
and you can't find
box
it now.
Box elder bugs. Anybody out there have any issues with box elder bugs? They've been really big deal this year, particularly in the St. Catharines area.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're getting all shivery when I say the word box elder bug. Okay.
Tell me you're going to slaughter them in
No, what it is in the fall, box elder bugs, which are often found in box elders, are looking for a winterizing, a place to spend the winter. They are looking for a frost-free location. They congregate on the warm south side of many of our buildings in the fall.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I did get an email, in this case, from both Dan and Marilyn in St. Catharines, who said they've had a problem the last few years, but this year has been particularly bad. Or grim, as they said. What do we do? She said we have lots of established maple trees, but no box elder trees that she's aware of. So bottom line is, yes, you avoid box elders. That will help you avoid the box elder bug. Nevertheless, they can travel, and they will, sometimes a kilometer or more, looking for a winterizing location. Don't worry about them on the outside of your buildings, but realize that they are looking for an opportunity to come in for a warm spot. They're going to, you know, hang out and drink hot chocolate and watch TV with you all winter. So they will not hurt you. They don't eat you or your pets. They don't eat your furniture or your food. They just want to hunker down and watch TV, really.
Right.
So there's they don't do any harm to anything, but they want to come in. So you've got to be out there with your little caulking gun. Make sure you've got every crack and cranny sealed. That's your main thing. That's your main way to avoid them entering your home. Seal every.
What size are these little devils?
You knew, half an inch. They're kind of pretty.
Yeah.
They're black. They've got some red marking on them. Little, you know, kind of neat looking. They're red and black. Not a bad looking bug. And as I said, do no damage to houseplants or pets or people or, you know, structures of homes. The one thing they do have, though, if you try and squish them.
Here we go.
They do have this little staining thing that they let go on their legs. Let out some kind of a stain. So if you squish them, you can end up doing some damage to your furniture and walls. So
I knew we'd get to the squishing. I knew it.
Don't squish them.
That's
in this
good.
Case,
okay.
Use your vacuum, vacuum them up, and take the vacuum outside and let them go. But make sure you sealed up all your cracks and crannies. Just to, don't let them in. Caulking windows and doors, repairing windows, door screens, and keep them out of the house. That's the main thing to do. Vacuum. Long hose attachment and vacuum, and don't squash.
Okay. And Charlie Dobbin's email address here is C, as in Charlie, Dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N, at am740.ca. And with that,
Thanks, Frank.
To go to a little commercial break here and come back and have a word with Anna from Vineland.
There are
hundreds of sources for tips on gardening, but you need only one. The AM 740 Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin continues.
And Frank Proctor here, back along for the ride. And I see Charlie doing some more brief research.
I just thought I should mention, talking about box elder
bugs. Yeah, I asked Charlie, what does a box elder tree look like?
Yeah, okay, so just to be clear, what's commonly referred to as a box elder is Acer negundo, which is a maple.
Of course.
And Acer negundo, I refer to as Manitoba maple.
Right.
It's a native tree, so we love our native trees, but it's a serious weed tree, something you do want to eliminate, if at all possible, because it will just really take over your yard.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
that. Very quickly. Thank you for the clarification.
Well, my pleasure. Anna in Vineland, good morning.
Morning. I'm so happy that you are on the air so we can you can help us with the gardens.
Oh, thank you.
What I have is I have a beautiful Christmas cactus, and it's so big now. I've had it for 10 years, and I always take the clippings when it gets big.
Good.
The thing is, it's rooted things, but I've got something accumulating on the soil. It's almost like somebody put salt on it, and I could clean it off around it, and it would disappear, and then it comes back. Mm-hmm. Now, what am I doing? I even used dish soap with water diluted. I thought maybe that was, but that doesn't help it either.
No, actually, what your first impulse is the correct one. That white powder or white stuff on the surface of the soil is salt.
Uh-huh.
It is from the fertilizer, or it's from your water. Uh-huh. Are you on treated water or well water? Where does your water come from?
No, we have it from the city.
Yeah, so
I guess it's from St. Catharines it comes through.
Yeah, okay, so all the water, particularly when it's city water, has been treated. So they've added things to it, like chlorine and bromine and fluoride and all these things. And also fertilizer is made up of nitrogen and magnesium and all these various isotopes that come together to make salts. So when we water our plants, some of these salts start to build up and come out of solution, and we start seeing that white precipitate right on the surface of the soil.
Uh-huh.
Two things you can do. And this, it's hard to do with a Christmas cactus because these are, when they get big, they're hard to, you know, handle. So the easy thing for you is you get out a spoon, you scrape off the surface of the soil where all that sort of white, chunky, powdery stuff is, throw that out into the composter or into the garbage, add some fresh potting soil just to bring the level back to where it was, you know, half inch or whatever, fresh soil, and leave it alone. The other, and you can just do that as necessary, you know, every 6 months, every year, just to keep that soil, freshening it up.
Okay.
The salt will always be on the surface like that. The other thing you can do, and it's a little tricky with Christmas cactus because you don't want to overwater them. They will rot if they get soggy and stay soggy. But one way that we can help get that salt out of the soil is you can immerse the entire plant, pot and all, under water in, say, the bathtub. And just putting it into a large quantity of water like that, the salt will go back into solution, right? It'll disappear, and it will dissipate out into the bathtub. And then, of course, you'll drain the bathtub and let the plant sit and drain for a couple hours, and then get it back out into your sunny windowsill, and don't water it for a couple of weeks until it dries right out again. So you just got to be careful with something like that, because it'd be easy to rot a Christmas cactus if it stayed wet for too long. But it is a good way to get that salt precipitated out of the soil.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Okay. Wonderful. I just wanted to say to Frank, we spoke on your dedications program about 2.5 years ago when I asked for our wedding anniversary.
Oh, yes, yes.
And the Prime Minister came to Vineland, so I said it was special. You did such a wonderful job. I keep listening to you every time I hear your voice. Ah, that's my man.
Aw,
thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your help.
Okay,
thanks,
you're welcome.
Anna.
Bye-bye. Thank you for those kind words.
Frank
appreciate that.
Frank does have a lot of fans.
Well, you know, you become, I think, you become part of a family. You really do.
Yes.
And I consider our listeners here at the station friends.
Family,
you know?
Exactly.
Really. And
it's welcome,
amazing.
Friends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's funny how it works in radio, but that's you do become part of people's lives, and they part of yours.
Yeah, and so you know they're at home like yelling at the radio if they don't like what we're saying.
Well,
or
like right about now, I hear someone saying, "Look, shut up! I've got a question," and that might be coming from Joanne in Fenton Falls. But first, we have to do a little exercise here. Yes, let me do some push-ups.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
Well,
no speedo this morning, though.
Well, you start working away on your push-ups and chin-ups. Here he goes. Oh, my goodness. I got to cover my eyes. Sierracil is a mineral supplement that both Frank and I take to keep ourselves limber and not whining. So you can get Sierracil through by giving them a phone call or ordering it over the web, but many of the natural food stores also carry Sierracil now. Here in Toronto, the Big Carrot on the Danforth carries Sierracil. You can buy it on the shelf. All the Whole Foods, different stores, carry it. Right there in St. Catharines, the Peanut Mill carries Sierracil. So if you have questions, the staff in the store can answer, or you can give the Sierracil people a call in Vancouver at 1-877-JOINT-14.
Friends say she's down to earth, and that's usually where you'll find her. Welcome back to the AM 740 Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
And Frank Proctor, the sous chef, as we zip along to cottage country up there to Fenland Falls to say hi to Joanne. Good morning. Welcome to the show, Joanne.
Morning.
Good morning, Charlie. Charlie, it's about an apple tree.
Mm-hmm.
When's the best time to prune them?
Best time to prune any of your fruit trees is in late winter, early spring.
Late winter.
Okay, so that's before any leaves have or flowers or anything has emerged.
Uh-huh.
Preferably in your area, it might be mid to late March.
Okay.
You know, you go out on a dry, sunny day,
mm-hmm.
and you have all your sharp tools in hand and your ladder as necessary. Though, if it's is it a big tree or a young tree?
No, it's probably about 30 years old.
Oh, so it's a fairly old tree.
Like it's an old tree when we moved in here and. Mm-hmm. When the apples come out, half of them fall off when they're just tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they grow, they get all black spots all over them.
Mm-hmm.
We got good apples 1 year. That was it, about 3 years ago.
Okay,
and
so
now, like I say, they get all these black spots on them. And
well, two things are probably happening. One, the dropping of the apples. The plants are sometimes quite smart, and they recognize that they can't actually mature
all
that fruit.
Yeah.
Exactly. That it's, and if it did, if all that fruit stayed on, the apples would be tiny.
Right.
So
right.
It does a drop. It self prunes, if you will, so that there'll be less fruit but bigger, healthier, potentially in for the purposes of eating, sweeter fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to avoid the spots and the various insects that love fruit trees, but apples particularly, dormant spray. So that's lime, sulfur, and dormant oil comes together in a little kit, and it'll be called dormant spray kit.
Uh-huh.
You can spray that in the fall, though it's perhaps a little bit late now to consider spraying, but you definitely want to spray that in the spring after you've done your pruning.
Right.
Okay, and it's temperature dependent, so you'll, you know, watch the temperatures, et cetera, for when to spray. But that is the most important spray of the year, the dormant spray. That will kill overwintering insects and overwintering fungal spores.
Okay.
That are on the surface.
Great.
Okay.
Now, Joanne, with those apples, do you make apple pies?
I can't. They're never good enough.
Yeah.
The 1 year, I did. I made pies and applesauce.
Sauce and cider.
But and any other year, no, they just get these black hard spots all over them, and you sort of have to eat around them.
Yeah, well, that's it. So the dormant spray will help you avoid that problem.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thanks, Joanne.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks, Joanne.
Have a good day.
Thank you very much.
I like the way you're digging for information on food.
Well, I'm digging for a free pie is what I was digging for.
You're always digging for free dessert.
Valerie in Scarborough, I think, will be our last caller today. Hello, Valerie.
So. Oh, hi, Charlie.
Morning.
And Frank. I have a problem with squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know if you know how to keep them away. They keep digging up my garden.
Oh, and this is the time of year when they're really digging up your garden. They're like picking up things and moving them and putting them, you know, digging and redesigning.
I tried black pepper and that different things I buy at the garden center, but they don't seem to work.
Squirrels are a tough one. There's no easy one sort of solution works every time. Sometimes people have good success by putting out actual squirrel, like food for the squirrels, you know, cracked corn, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Give them a little place in the garden that's theirs. Let them come there, eat that food, move on, move out, and then they'll leave the rest of your garden alone, potentially. I know they do that at the White House. That's one of the ways they protect all their bulbs. Mm-hmm. They plant tens of thousands of bulbs every fall, but they have complete area just for the for feeding the squirrels so that they don't dig up all the bulbs. Mm. Otherwise, we get into mechanical protection, you know, chicken wire, some of the things you've been trying. Blood meal can work for a little while because they don't like the smell of the blood meal sprinkled around in areas where they've been digging. They smell. They know there's a big animal out there. They've never seen a cow, but yeah, they know that's a big animal. So that works for a while. Mm-hmm. Sometimes human hair can work. There's a motion detector sprinklers can sometimes work for a while. A dog can sometimes work, just keep the squirrels moving off the property. I'm a big fan of a shotgun if you can get away with it. You know, there's just sort of 101 different things. No one thing works forever all the time. It's it's an ongoing battle with the squirrels.
Of all you've suggested, I think the feeding spots with food design that squirrels will love sounds like a good one to me.
Yeah, it can be, because it keeps them busy with that. Then they leave your garden alone. And if they're digging up areas where you've been digging, remember, they're very curious animals. They see freshly turned soil. They got to see what's underneath it. Okay. So whenever you've just planted some bulbs or rearranged, you know, cleaned up something in the garden, grab a handful of leaves, throw that on top of where you've just done, you know, your work.
They're out there, they're worth the binoculars watching you.
Absolutely.
Aren't they?
Yeah. They have spies everywhere. And they have an incredible ability to communicate the information. So, yeah, whenever you've just done a nice new planting job, make sure you don't make it look like it's just been planted. Mess it up afterwards, and they won't suspect a thing.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
Thank you, Valerie, very much for calling in.
Thank you.
Good luck with that.
Okay.
And to all our listeners, we hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Yes, indeed. Enjoy the rest of this weekend. It's not going to rain tomorrow. I think we'll be able to get some work done and be lots of leaves to rake up.
Absolutely.
And incorporate into the garden.
Yeah, and I invite the folks to keep tuned. Dave's Corner Garage on the air, of course, coming up, and then I'll be back
You're
at 11 o'clock with Live in the City.
There you go, and lots going on in the city today.
There certainly is, Ollie. See you next week.
Thanks, everybody, for great calls. Thanks, Dave and Frank. You're the best. See you next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.